Ryan Day finally breaks through. The Ohio State Buckeyes are national champions. Is this the most impressive national championship we've ever seen? All that plus so much more on today's edition of the College Football Power Hour. The 2024 national champion has been crowned. The Ohio State Buckeyes take down Notre Dame 34-23 in Atlanta in the national championship game. Ohio State won the very first ever college football playoff national championship back in 2014. And it's been about 10 years of frustration and Ohio State fans building more and more resentment for Ryan Day and the coaching staffs. And then here we are 10 years later, and Ohio State is again a first in the college football playoff and as far as national champions go, but the first national champion in the expanded college football playoff. I think that there's so many different angles that we can take in this game, but the first storyline of the game, I think, has to go to Will Howard, who was nearly perfect in the national championship, 17 for 21 pass attempts, 231 yards, two touchdowns, zero interceptions. He didn't throw an incompletion until like the final 30 to 40 seconds of the first half. And then it was that throw to Jeremiah Smith on 3rd and 11 with 2.5 minutes left, 56 yards to his most trusted receiver to get a first down and to pretty much kind of put the game on ice. That's how it felt like. Will Howard was the story, the number one storyline of this game that had so many storylines. Welcome in, by the way, to the College Football Power Hour, the final game reaction of the 2024 season. Adam Brenneman, Jason Fitz, I'm Caroline Fenton. Adam, you were in Atlanta. You were in the house for the national championship game. Your initial reactions?
Yeah, Caroline, I mean, you mentioned Will Howard. I think he's the storyline here, and not just for how he threw the football in this game, which he was elite throwing the ball, but really how he stepped up in the run game, too. I mean, 16 carries, 60 yards on the ground. That, to me, is the underrated stat. I mean, a handful of those 16 carries were first downs, were converted first downs in critical moments. And we've talked on this show. I've been wondering all year, when does Will Howard running the football play a factor for Ohio State? It finally did in their biggest game of the season. Shout out to the Ohio State offensive line. Another new combination up front, and they found a way to get it done again. But listen, Fitz, I mean, that game started with a beautiful Notre Dame 18-play, 75-yard drive, took 10 minutes off the clock. I was watching and thinking, man, like that's how Notre Dame wins this game, by having drives like that. But then from that moment, zero panic from Ohio State. Give Ryan Day credit. Ohio State comes back with a 10-minute drive, and then since that moment had textbook three possessions in a row and scored 21 straight points, you know, perfect on third down during those three drives, almost perfect throwing the football. And after that, I mean, after those three drives from Ohio State, it's remarkable this thing was a one-score game at the end.
That first drive for Notre Dame, I think every old school football fan, every Big Ten, you know, vintage football fan was like, yeah, football, let's run it 13 times on an 18-play drive, Fitz.
That's why I think maybe the most important play of this entire game was actually the first drive for Ohio State. They had third down on their opening drive. The first time they touched the ball, it was 3rd and 4 or 5. Will Howard had to roll around a little bit, find the guy, get him the first down. I kept thinking, man, they have to get a first down here because their defense had just been on the field for 10 minutes. I mean, you put him back on the field, even though Riley Leonard was also gassed, you put him back on the field, you're asking for a Herculean effort. So it's funny because the calm is really a theme of this game from both sides. When Notre Dame got down big, they didn't panic. Ohio State always felt like they were really in control of this thing. But the calm from Will Howard, for somebody that throughout the course of this year, if we're being fair, we've had a real honest conversation several times of how much do we trust Will Howard? Is he going to make a mistake? Like, can you really put it on his back? And what you saw throughout the course of the playoffs was every week was like this growing confidence meter for Will Howard. And he came out so decisive in this game, just so under control in this game. And when they were in man and he saw that he had the opportunity to run, he took those opportunities over and over and over again. Like, even when Notre Dame tried to adjust, Will Howard just felt like he was one step ahead of Notre Dame. It was an incredible effort for a young man that, you know, at times this year has been questioned. And now you look at it and say, man, he's unquestionably had an incredible game that Ohio State fans will remember forever.
And Fitz, to credit, I mentioned the Ohio State offensive line, but one of the best changes this Ohio State offense did throughout the season, and it came up big against Notre Dame, was they really switched from a zone run scheme to a gap scheme when their offensive line started to have issues. And we saw it tonight in the game. I mean, so many times it was Will Howard, it was Quinshon Judkins following those pulling guards and those pulling tackles. And for offensive lines, a lot of times that scheme, the gap scheme on offense running the football, is easier to execute than the zone scheme. There's a lot less question marks when you're running gap schemes like power and counter, because you're down blocking, you're pulling a guard, they're blocking the linebacker, and the running back follows them. And that gap scheme was perfect against Notre Dame. And it also slowed down Notre Dame's linebackers in this game and opened up some of that play action pass. It kept their linebackers from playing downhill, made them hesitate with all the backfield movement with the pulling guards. I thought that scheme, I mean, you look at the Ohio State offense when they played Michigan, all zone, all outside zone, inside zone, RPO, where now you look at Ohio State playing Notre Dame, and it was gap scheme, downhill football, and it led to Quinshon Judkins averaging 9 yards a carry. I thought that switch was perfect, and they executed it really well against Notre Dame.
Quinshon Judkins, another one with a massive game, 11 carries, 100 yards, 2 touchdowns. I'm glad that you brought up just kind of the scheme side of things, because as we were talking about this game, going into this game in our last podcast, you were talking about how you kind of got to dance with the girl that you brought to the party. And that's exactly how Notre Dame got to the national championship game, was schematics defensively, that they were such a man team. I feel like that hurt Notre Dame really for the better part of three plus quarters. I got to a certain point in this game where I think Will Howard had completed 13 of his 13 pass attempts. And I thought, at what point is Notre Dame going to make at least a few adjustments defensively? I think part of it, of the success that Will Howard was having throwing the football and also running the football, as you pointed out, was partly just taking what Notre Dame's defense was giving them. But then I also look at that 3rd and 11. Well, Notre Dame rushed 7, and Will Howard didn't even get touched. So part of it, and I want to get your thoughts on that, was how much of that was Notre Dame just not coming into this game with the correct scheme defensively, and how much of it was Ohio State's offensive line was just off the charts, and Ohio State is just out-talenting this Notre Dame defense.
I think it's a great point, Caroline. Listen, Notre Dame and Al Golden, their defense coordinator, they had no choice but to play man-to-man against Ohio State, because you don't go, 15 games throughout the season, be the number one man-to-man team in the country, play cover one almost every single snap, and then all of a sudden switch up your whole identity for the national championship game. So they had no choice but to play that scheme. But what better happened, if you're going to play man-to-man, especially against an offense that has Emeka Abuka, Jeremiah Smith, Carnell Tate, those running backs, is you better be able to get pressure. You better be able to make Will Howard get the ball out of his hands on time. And this was a Notre Dame defensive line that struggled to get pressure in the game. Credit to this Ohio State offensive line. Notre Dame had, 1 or 2 sacks in the game? I think one was towards the end of the game. So they struggled to get pressure on Will Howard. And in the biggest moments, I mean, think about that conversion, 3rd and 11, you mentioned, Caroline, at the end of the game. I mean, they bring the pressure. If you're going to bring 7, you better get home. It doesn't take an elite wideout to beat you. It doesn't take an elite quarterback to beat you when you bring 7 and it's 1-on-1 and you don't get pressure. But then you combine that with having Will Howard at quarterback and Jeremiah Smith at wideout, and they're going to beat you every single time for an explosive play. So I think that the credit, it's more so that Ohio State's offensive line is the storyline of this game, came to play, dominated in the run game, and held up and protected Will Howard. And that's the reason Will Howard was 17-21 passing. And on those third down moments, when Notre Dame did bring pressure, when they played man coverage, Ohio State was able to execute almost every single time.
I mean, also, let's be real, Ohio State communicated better on the offensive side when there was blitz pickup to be made, right? Like, we saw a couple of big plays for Notre Dame where they were running linebacker stunts and there was no answer. Running back was too late, getting over resulted in a big sack, and all of a sudden you're behind the chains if you're Notre Dame, and we know that offense can't really recover from that. To y'all's point, I think it's important to note here that Will Howard, even when it felt like if they set the farm, Will Howard was just untouched, right? Wasn't even disrupted. It's not that he wasn't sacked. He wasn't even disrupted. So then if they didn't send the farm and they tried to go back into man coverage, then Will was beating them with their legs. Then when they tried to adjust that to that and say, okay, we're going to leave somebody into spy, now it left a problem where they didn't have the help they needed in the backside of the defense. Like, these are all of the things that Ohio State is just, it's a bad matchup. Like, Ohio State is a bad matchup when they use all their weapons for almost everybody. Look at the defenses, and we need to stress this over and over again. They went through Tennessee that had one of the best defensive lines in the country with no problem. They went through the number one team in the country with no problem. They went through a Texas team that had a great defense with no problem. And then what do you know? They put up points basically at will until late in the game against one of the better defenses. Like, I don't know that there was any defense in college football that would be able to shut down Ohio State when they're playing as efficiently as they did in the national championship.
And I feel like that has been the case really throughout the entirety of the playoffs, like you just laid out. But I don't think that Will Howard got nearly the credit that he deserved for that, for Ohio State's offensive performances. And look, Jeremiah Smith and Quinshon Judkins deserve all of the credit in the conversation in the world. But it felt like the conversation surrounding Will Howard just kind of took a back burner. And I think after his performance tonight, you can't. Like, Will Howard has to be the number one topic of conversation. And we talked about that going into this game, of which quarterback do you really trust more? I think it's fair to lay out just the decorum, the vibe, the feeling that it felt like both of these quarterbacks had early on. Yes, that drive from Notre Dame, that opening drive, 18 plays, took almost 10 minutes off the clock. It was, I don't want to say surgical because it got ugly a little bit, yeah. But it was perfect. It was chef's kiss. It was exactly what you would want to open up a national championship game. But it felt like ever since that drive, when, according to Molly McGrath, who was the sideline reporter, said that Riley Leonard yacked after that drive and was just kind of breathing a little heavy, rightfully so. I mean, he took a whole lot of hits, and I think he ran 13 of those 18 or 10 of those 13 run plays in that 18 play opening drive. But it felt like since that opening drive, Riley Leonard never really got calm. Like, it felt like the whole time that he was kind of seeing ghosts, it felt the whole time that he was incredibly jittery, whereas on the other side, Will Howard just felt so laid back, so comfortable, just trusted so much of what they were doing. And a lot of that, rightfully so, is Will Howard was clicking early. And whenever you're connecting on those early passes, it's really easy to get into a groove, and it's really easy to kind of feel that sense of confidence and that sense of swagger. For the first half, I didn't feel like Riley Leonard had it, until it was almost too late, until it was that 10-play, 75-yard drive in, like, middle of the third quarter, that touchdown drive where Notre Dame cut their deficit 31-15. It just felt too late for Riley Leonard to get in his groove, Adam.
Yeah, a few things come to mind that I saw watching the game there in person. Riley Leonard, after that first drive, first of all, you mentioned, I mean, he was gassed after that first drive. Absolutely gassed. I mean, 18 plays, he ran the ball a few times. I mean, he was gassed. And you could tell then throughout the rest of the first half, I thought he didn't look the same. He didn't look as good as he looked on that first drive. Ohio State's defense has been successful all year long because they've been able to get pressure without blitzing. That was the same story against Notre Dame. They were able to get pressure on Riley Leonard without having to bring an extra rusher. They can brush four, drop seven, play good coverage, and still get to the quarterback and puts the opposing quarterback in a really tough situation. You know, I think that, and then that pressure of when you just rushed four forces Riley Leonard to make quicker decisions and then limits his ability to go through his progressions and find open receivers. On top of that, this is kind of like a snowball effect. On top of that, Notre Dame struggled to run the football, averaged 2 yards a carry. So you're constantly in third down and long, in second down and long situations, and puts a lot of pressure on your quarterback. Again, no balance to lean on. And the only part of the run game that worked at times was Riley Leonard running the football. And then the third piece of this is just that I thought Ohio State's defensive backs played really sticky coverage in this game and created tight windows the entire time and forced Riley Leonard to really try to fit the ball in there. You know, there were some plays that Riley Leonard made. I don't think he played terrible in this game. I don't think he played bad, but no. But just he was never able to get the kind of offense going that Ohio State and Will Howard were. And I think you know, that combination of just get it constantly being under pressure and then not having a run game to lean on makes it really tough for an offense.
It also comes back to what we saw in that first drive. Because as Herculean as that was, and as much as it was like this great Disney movie moment, and it was like the ultimate, oh my God, they're just going to look at the guts of everything they're putting together for this drive. I get all of that. But also, it felt like every single yard was just being ripped through by Notre Dame. It was one of those earning every inch on the field you're getting, and that never felt sustainable. I mean, and Adam mentioned that they averaged 2 yards a rush. Let's just, I mean, Jeremiah Love had 4 carries for 3 yards.
Yeah, he was non-existent.
The play calling never really tried to get any other running option involved. I felt like watching Notre Dame's offense, it felt to me like Notre Dame as a team didn't trust anything in their offense to go right. And so it all felt like it was very cautious. It all felt like it was very grinded out to a fault. Like, what did we see late in the game when they started to open up and there was a little bit more confidence? There was a better passing flow, all of these things. It just, for the first 3 quarters, it didn't feel like Notre Dame trusted themselves offensively.
It did feel very conservative, and there are two areas that I feel like Notre Dame has excelled in really throughout the entirety of the season, but it's been on full display in the college football playoff, and that is elite special teams. Like I've said it before, I'll say it again, Notre Dame is the closest to 33%, 33%, and 33% in offense, defense, and special teams, maybe more so than any other team in the country. Elite special teams and capitalizing off of turnovers. And those are two things that Notre Dame was not able to do. Like the 4th-and-2 fake punt, I understood that the getting creative and the kind of funky play calls and the fakes may have worked earlier, like it did against Georgia whenever they brought the punt team on, and then they subbed all 11 in the punt team, and then they drew Georgia offsides and they got the first down. Like, I understand that worked in the past, but it's 4th-and-2. And I don't have any issue whatsoever with Marcus Freeman deciding to go for it there on 4th down, because it's, you know, 3rd quarter, you're down, I think it was 16 at the time.
16, yeah.
Punt on 4th-and-2. It feels like a little bit of a concession. So I have no problem with Marcus Freeman going for it on 4th-and-2. But if you're going to go for it on 4th-and-2, go for it. Keep the offense on the field. Don't get cute with it. Bow up and go for it on 4th-and-2. So kind of a special team snafu that we're not accustomed to Notre Dame seeing, or Notre Dame doing, rather. And then on the capitalizing on turnovers aspect of it all, at this point, Notre Dame's getting a lot of momentum. You know, they just scored. It's 31-15. There's plenty of time left. Like, Marcus Freeman was shown on the sideline saying, look, that's one. That's just one more score that we needed to get that we got taken care of. And it did feel like there was a little bit more mojo going on the Notre Dame sidelines. And then it was the forced fumble. The forced fumble, Emeka Egbuka, and it was Derek Bowen that forced the fumble, and it was like right at midfield. And I thought, okay, this is it. This is the opportunity for Notre Dame to either make things incredibly uncomfortable or for Notre Dame to eventually kind of build that comeback. And then you kick a field goal down 16, and it's brutal doink.
I didn't have a hard time with the field goal call. The only reason I didn't have a hard time with the field goal call
is
you needed... You needed 2 touchdowns and 2 2-point conversions. That's just asking a lot. And I thought, you know what? They were moving the ball at that point. So suddenly they're moving the ball. I'm like, all right, kick the field goal. And at least now I know you could say you're 2 scores either way. I think that's oversimplifying the chances that you're going to go through and get a 2-point conversion every single time. I have no problem going for the field goal.
It feels like a waste.
I think the field goal is the completely wrong call. I don't know. I was shocked that they ran the field goal team out there. I don't think there's an analytics book in the nation that would tell you to kick a field goal there.
It was 4th-and-goal from what, the 9?
From the 9.
The chances
the
that
nine,
you're
going to
get the 4th-and-9.
Yeah, but you're down 16 points. You're down 16 points. A field goal literally does nothing for you. And
it gets you to 2 touchdowns.
And
it gets
your offense
has
some momentum at that point. Why
you're
not?
You're within 2 touchdowns.
Why not? Like, you need every opportunity possible to score touchdowns to win that game. Like, to take a play away from your offense where you could possibly score a touchdown, and a field goal doesn't even change how many scores you need to win the game. I didn't understand that. But I will say I have a bigger issue with the fake punt. For the reasons Caroline said, and also on top of that, I mean, the fake punt was mind-boggling to me, because that is the most predictable. The point of a fake punt is you do it when no one thinks you're going to run a fake punt.
Chris Fowler called it out.
No doubt. Everyone, they should have gone for it on that 4th-and-2 anyway. And if you're going to go for it, as you say, Caroline, leave your offense on the field. Leave your veteran quarterback on the field. If I'm Ryan Leonard, I'd be pissed the hell off that I got taken off the field in that moment. Like, why am I not having the ball in my hands? I'm Riley Leonard, and I led my team to this point. And 4th-and-2, our best play is quarterback power. Why am I not running the football? And then on top of that, if you're going to run a fake punt, Well, don't make it a low percentage throw on an out route. I mean, what are we doing? Like, at least run a better fake punt than that. It just was so predictable. Everyone knew they were going to fake it at that point. And it's not even a high percentage play for the fake. So
yeah, if you're going to be dumb, at least be smart.
Bad call. Yeah, I thought, yeah, if you're going to be dumb, at least try to like put some better effort into it. I thought that was a really bad call, and it was a big momentum shift in the game. And again, if I'm Riley Leonard, I'm pissed. I'm like, why do I not have the ball in my hands to make a play if we're going to go 4th and 4th and 2?
I totally agree, by the way. Like, I think the fact that they had their backup quarterback on the field and you know that they run fakes anyway, like, you just basically tipped your hand. Like, you're the worst poker player in the world at this point. Everybody knows what's coming. I agree.
If I'm Riley Leonard, I'm also pissed that I'm not on the field for the 4th down and 9 to try to make it a 1-score game. That I'm also mad about that.
And again I get that it was a 2-score game. I just think the concept, it was a 3-score game at one point. The concept of scoring 3 touchdowns and getting 3 2-point conversions all in a game feels very unrealistic to me. So that's the only reason. 4th and 9 didn't feel convertible when they weren't. They moved the offense there. 4th and goal from the 9 didn't feel convertible to me. If it had been 4th and goal from the 4, maybe, but 4th and goal from the 9, if they score that field goal there, look at what happened after that. They got the stop, they got the ball back, they get the touchdown and the 2-point conversion. At that point, it would have been they would have been within striking distance. You know,
but they still need a touchdown.
Yeah,
just like they would need.
I get that, but they wouldn't need another 2-point conversion. I just think that the chances you're going to get.
Correct.
Yeah. When have any of us ever seen a team get 3 touchdowns and 3 2-point conversions all in a game? I just think that's a heavy lift. Like, in my mind, I understand
Are you not an analytics guy? Are you not a books guy?
I'm enough of a nerd, but I
thought you were a math analytics guy. The analytics don't tell you to kick a field goal right there.
Nobody tells you to kick a field goal there. Not the old timers.
I actually wish that we could see, we're filming this like right after the game, so we haven't seen the press conferences yet. Mm-hmm. I'm sure Marcus Freeman's being asked about that.
That should be the first question that's asked, is why in the world would you decide to kick a field goal there? Because I hear you, Fitz. The likelihood of scoring 2 more touchdowns and 2 more 2-point conversions doesn't seem incredibly high. But neither does winning a football game when you kick a field goal down 16. I would say there is a lower chance of you winning a football game when you kick a field goal down 16 than there is to score twice and get 2 more 2-point conversions.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I will say this: respect to Notre Dame for fighting to make that thing interesting in the 4th quarter.
Totally.
I left midway through the 4th quarter and I got in my Uber to come do the show, and I'm like, wait, this is a 1-score game. But
you did text us that you were leaving the stadium when it got juicy, and I was like, no, go back.
With 10 minutes to go, clanking a field goal off the upright was not an option. That's the bottom line, and that's what happened.
The only comfort we all have for everybody that might have dabbled on it is that they still want, you know, at the end of the day, you still got an 11-point win. Like, that's the one thing that it got a little hairy there for a lot of people that had the 8.5 on that. Got a little hairy there until the last 30 seconds, but they still got the 11-point win.
It got a little uncomfy there, but it was a much better game to get a little uncomfy there and like midway through the third and the beginning of the 4th quarter versus the alternative of what it kind of felt like it was going to be going into halftime when Ohio State scored before half and then they got the ball back in the 3rd quarter. I thought, oh, this is going to get ugly and it's going to get ugly fast.
Yeah.
So yeah, credit to, and I don't mean to patronize this Notre Dame team, but credit to Notre Dame for being able to at least make things interesting.
One more thought is I was leaving that game and Ohio State finally won. Here's what I was thinking. Ohio State just finished the greatest 4-game stretch, maybe in college football history.
I think that's
against four of the biggest brands ever in the sport. I mean, just pause and think about it. Double-digit wins against Tennessee and Oregon, beating Texas and Notre Dame, and double-digit wins as well. Unbelievable. Coming off of the Michigan planting a flag on their home field logo to this. I mean, what a run this was in the playoffs. One of the most talented teams of all time. I think one of the greatest football teams we've seen recently. They have those two blemishes. It's funny. I was at the game with my brother, and he said it's almost like a bad look on Ryan Day. Like, how did this team have 2 losses? You know, like winning this championship so well, so easily, and playing this in the playoff almost makes it look worse. But just hats off to Ryan Day to get the guys to bounce back and the leaders of Ohio State, Jack Sawyer and Will Howard, to go on this run. Really, really remarkable. I think it's one of the best runs we've seen.
You say it's the greatest 4-game stretch. I think at this point, Ohio State fans should be able to say that they have the most deserving champion we've ever seen.
No
doubt. When you think about what has to happen now,
for sure,
through the college football playoff, what you have to do to win a championship now is such a heavy lift. It's just, and how they had to win to get there. This is wild. And if we had started the whole year, if we go back to last summer when we first started this pod and we sat there and said, okay, what we're going to get is Ohio State's going to lose to Michigan, and then they're going to have to go through Tennessee, Oregon, Texas, and Notre Dame to win a national championship. Like, that is college football legacy after legacy after legacy. Like, that's the equivalent of college football porn for everybody. Like, this is the best thing. Like, these brands, this is the best thing you can ever want.
What'd you just say?
College football porn. Yeah. Like, you know, like, this is like, it's just, it's too good to be true. There you go, Adam. Now I've made the whole world come.
It's too good to be true.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know where I'm going with the analogy. It's
guys,
late.
I got a fumble.
Oh, you're welcome.
College football porn. That's good.
That's what it is.
Good. I'm going to start using that.
But also add on top of it that Ohio State beat Penn State in the regular season. Another top five team. So Ohio State on this path has beaten five of the best teams in the country. And really, they did it making it look really easy in the whole process. So I would say hardest earned, you know, most obviously, you know, the longest road to get here, adding in the fact that Ohio State was playing in week one of the college football playoff, as was Notre Dame, and incredibly impressive to overcome the injuries that that Notre Dame suffered throughout the season and throughout the playoffs. But Kirk Herbstreit made this point on the broadcast while we're giving Ryan Day his flowers. He was talking about how difficult it is to be the head coach at Ohio State. And look, I understand that he's getting paid handsomely to do it. So it's really easy for a lot of people to say, okay, cry me a river, Ryan Day. But I think we all know that Ohio State fan base, for as much as Ohio State has achieved under Ryan Day, it was never enough. Nothing was ever going to satisfy this Ohio State fan base until they won a national championship. And I still think there's probably a fraction of the fan base that is like, that's great that we won a national championship and all, but we lost to Michigan, 0-4 against Michigan over the last 4 years. So it's almost like you just can't please everybody. And I do feel like Ryan Day and his family has probably been going through it over the last few years of just wanting more and Ryan Day not being able to deliver on the big stage. So hats off to Ryan Day. Kudos to Ryan Day for finally being able to break through and win the big one and finally kind of hush all of the chatter that's been going on around him and that program over the last few years.
Yeah, it's kind of funny how when Ohio State lost to Michigan, the only thing I heard Ohio State fans say was, Ryan Day is fired unless he wins the Natty. That's what everyone said. And he just turns around and wins the Natty. It's like kind of remarkable.
Easy as that.
Bald as a lie. Yeah. Yeah. BCSA. Yeah. Win, job right, win saved. The Natty and keep my job.
Yay, we don't have to sell the house. Woohoo. Yeah. Adam, I did want to ask you, though, you were at the game. What was the fan base ratio? Like, on the broadcast, it looked like 80% Ohio State fans. There was a lot of red.
So, I thought the same thing from where I was sitting, but the way the cameras are, like, that's the Ohio State side, and I was on the Notre Dame side. I would say it was probably, like, closer to 50-50.
Okay.
It certainly looked that way. Like, it was a lot of red on that one side of the field. I thought it was pretty close. I mean, I saw there was a lot of green on the side I was on. So I would say it was pretty close. I was walking in the game, and a lot of fighting going on with the fan base. A lot of screaming at each other. You know, Ohio State fans call Notre Dame fans annoying.
Yeah. I don't know why I just raised my eyebrows. I'm 0% surprised.
Like, two fan bases that, like, without a doubt, just start fighting with each other. So it was intense, though. There was some emotions. And even I was leaving the game, like, in the fourth quarter, people were starting to leave. And I heard an Ohio State fan say, like, screaming about how they still lost to Michigan. He's like, how do you lose to Michigan with this team? So, I mean, there's a good look inside the Ohio State mindset right now.
Yeah. Who cares? Like, I'm going to say loudly again, who cares that you lost to Michigan, y'all? You got a national championship. It is interesting. I don't know if you guys saw this on Twitter leading up to the game. The prices were driving up. Usually the closer you get to the game like this, the more they drive down. But prices were driving up. So this was actually like the weird exception. I think a lot of people were trying to get in last second just to see this game. So interesting that it sort of hit that way.
Yeah. I got to tell you guys like a 1-minute story before we get to the next segment. So I did a college football ticket giveaway on social media. So I had two tickets to the Natty and I gave them away to someone for free. I did it through this like platform where they like people have to like follow you to enter the whole deal. So I do it through this platform. I don't control who wins, obviously. Well, I announced I'm doing the giveaway and I get a call from Riley Leonard's cousin, who I've known for a while. And he's like, hey, Riley's family, we need two more tickets. We have six. We need eight. Because like our grandparents are on some story like that. Can Riley Leonard's family win the ticket giveaway? I'm like, dude, I can't control the ticket giveaway, right? And so he's like, come on, anything you can do to help us. So I 1,000 people enter the giveaway and I tell him, listen, I can't do anything, just enter and see what happens. The dude wins the ticket giveaway.
No
and Riley
way.
Leonard's family got the two tickets to my giveaway.
That's incredible.
And the
That's
funniest incredible. Thing is they think that I rigged it for them.
That's amazing.
I get a call. They're like, Adam, we can never repay you enough. Tickets were $2,000. Out of 1,000 people, they win the giveaway. I had nothing to do with it. Complete random online. I didn't even see the email went out. I just got a screenshot of the email saying, congrats, you won the giveaway that they sent to me and said thank you. How funny is that?
So you
congrats
just
to Riley Leonard's family.
Totally would have been like, yeah, you're welcome. I totally did that
I did.
For you guys.
Oh, I did.
Yeah, anytime. Just remember, you owe me. You owe me for this next time. But to talk about a team of destiny, my goodness, just add that on top of it. That's awesome. That's awesome. All right, quick break here. We've got college football power hour, power hour, powerhouse, and power hour, power outage. Say that 5 times fast. Coming up next. All right, power hour, powerhouse. Fitz, who gets your powerhouse?
I will give the powerhouse to the third down offense of Ohio State. I mean, 9-12 in this game. And I mean, effortless for three quarters. It was pretty alarming. Third and long, third and short, didn't matter. Whenever Notre Dame dialed up, felt like Will Howard was one step ahead of it. Third down offense just was absolutely, it was a big part of why they won this game. Notre Dame's going to be looking back at this for years, trying to figure out how their defense couldn't get them off the field on third down. That to me was the biggest key in this game. So want to give it a little bit of love. It gets my powerhouse, Adam.
Yeah, I like it. That third down offense was really good. And again, I think it goes back a lot to the offensive line. I'll go with, how about just the college football playoff? I mean, that product was fantastic. Viewership through the roof. We got more good games. There's a lot of things to fix still. You got to fix the recruiting calendar. You got to fix the dates the portal is open. But as a product, I mean, this college football playoff was really awesome. I mean, the semifinal games were unreal. This championship game ended up being good. Was still a lot to fix. Joel Klatt's post, I felt, was awesome about January 1st should become college football's day, and that's when the Natty should be played. I hate that the Natty's played on a Monday night. It just doesn't make a ton of sense. But, I mean, overall, like, you know, power hours, the college football playoff. I mean, it was a great product. Viewership's never been higher, and I think our sport of college football has never been better than it is right now.
Well, we get more games that matter. And that has always been my point from the very beginning. But I also think it's important to point out that the two teams that we just saw compete for a national championship, the two teams that have beaten some of the best teams in the country, Notre Dame beating Penn State and Georgia and Indiana and Ohio State beating Tennessee and Oregon and in Texas in the process, now Notre Dame in the process, those two teams probably would have been left out of a 4-team playoff.
That's
like a two-loss Ohio State team and a Notre Dame team that had the 60-something ranked strength of schedule with a loss to Northern Illinois, like they're probably on the outside looking in. I don't want to think about a college football playoff world this year where Ohio State's not in it. Like the expanded playoff has allowed teams to get better. The expanded playoff has allowed teams to have a couple of blemishes on their schedule and still be considered one of the best teams in the country. So I'm with you 100% there. Allow me to self-indulge a little bit for the Power Hour powerhouse. Power Hour powerhouse goes to Brian Kelly for avoiding the vitriol and the conversation and the questions that would have arisen had Notre Dame won the national championship. Because let's not forget, it was not that long ago. It was, what, 3 years ago when Brian Kelly left Notre Dame to come to LSU because he said that it would be easier to win a national championship at LSU than it would be Notre Dame. And maybe in a pre-NIL, pre-expanded playoff world, there was a little bit of truth to that. But the fact remains is he said that, and Notre Dame was playing in the national championship, and LSU's been at home since the beginning of the college football playoff. I know that that still exists. That pressure obviously still exists for Brian Kelly. And that kind of, you know, jabbing and joking about Brian Kelly is still going to exist because he's a super easy person to make fun of. But Notre Dame not winning the national championship at least avoids that conversation getting really loud. And it avoids all the memes that inevitably would have come out from it. And it avoids a whole lot of angry LSU fans that probably would have been banging on his doorstep waiting for him to answer when he was going to bring one of those to LSU. So
powerhouse
to be
I'm talking about me.
Well, like Caroline, you realize that's your coach. That's your coach you're talking about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I
don't want to say unfortunately because I don't feel that way wholeheartedly, but it's what it is.
I find myself over the course of this playoff dying on this hill a lot when people say Notre Dame needs to join a conference, talking about how tough it is for them to win a championship, blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, they got to join a conference. I just want to remind everybody that Notre Dame will never get a bye. Notre Dame will never get the automatic bid that comes with it by not joining a conference. Like, Notre Dame not being a conference actually will always make their path to a national championship tougher. So for everyone that sits there and says, well, they're not in a conference and blah, blah, blah. Okay, that means that We will every year spend early, if they blow a game like they did this year, there'll be an early season conversation. Will there be enough at-large bids? Are they going to be able to get in?
No.
They're never going to be able to sneak in through the back door. It's like, we didn't really belong, but somehow we won our conference. They're not going to be SMU and find their way into this thing. Like, they're going to have to win their way in every single year and be one of the seven best non-automatic qualifiers. That's just... I just want to remind everybody that there is no wiggle room for Notre Dame. So for all the people that say that it's unfair that they don't join a conference, I will remind you that their path to a national championship is actually much tougher. And if they choose to take the tougher path because they want to keep the money for themselves, they don't want to join all the... Like, that's up to them. If they want to have a tougher path, let them do it.
I'm just laughing at, if only Notre Dame was SMU. Ugh. Notre Dame can never be SMU.
the entire money breakdown is kind of funny. How much money Notre Dame takes home versus every other conference, but tougher path, higher upside for them. I think it's fair.
Yeah, and I actually think it's a positive, at least for Notre Dame this year. We only have a 1 year sample size of the expanded playoffs, so take that with a grain of salt. But if Notre Dame's path, if they looked at it this past year and said, okay, well, if our draw in the first round is going to be a team like Indiana, albeit talented and deserving of being in the playoff, but not nearly as talented as a Ohio State, Oregon, Texas, or Georgia team, we'll take that, especially considering the teams that played in the first rounds of the college football playoff fared much better than the teams that had a bye in the first round of the college football playoff, at least in 1 year.
Yeah.
All right, college football power hour, power outage. Adam, who gets yours?
Yeah, my power outage is going to be anyone who believed or still believes that money buys championships in college football and only money. As I was watching that game, I kept coming back to Ohio State developed their entire defense this year, except for one player, Caleb Downs. Ohio State has never once... for this team, taking a single transfer wide receiver. They added to the roster through the portal, just like Notre Dame did. Both got a veteran quarterback that to plug into the roster. But those two teams the other night were a product of development, of talent acquisition through high school, and building a real team. The majority of money that both these teams spent, especially Ohio State, was to keep their championship roster intact, was to keep the best players on this team. And all week, I felt like I did a radio interview, and you know the notion that I got asked about it. Well, is it fair that Ohio State went out and bought their entire roster? That's not what happened. And they developed.
But also, if that is what happened,
right,
that's fine. That's allowed. You can do that.
Correct. But I think my point here is that in the sport of college football, talent development building the team the right way, the way that it's been done a long time, and still using the portal, but developing through high school and keeping guys on your team and building a culture and having, take a shot, I said culture, and having players who want to play for each other and love their coach. Like, that's what wins championships, and that's what Ohio State did. They developed this defense, they developed the receiver room, they developed that offensive line, and it won them a national title.
I love that call.
I think it's all fair points. And I think that we're still so early in the grand scheme of things of the transfer portal world and this new college football world that there is no perfect formula quite yet. But it does kind of feel like the perfect formula is developing players, recruiting them out of high school, retaining players, and supplementing that through the transfer portal. Because let's not forget, who had a massive day tonight for Ohio State? Will Howard, transfer portal quarterback. Who had a massive day for Ohio State tonight? Quinshon Judkins, transfer portal running back. This Ohio State team is not the same, and I would venture to say that this season looks completely different for Ohio State without those two. And I know those are two examples, but those are two really big examples. But this Ohio State run would also look very different without the developed players that have dreamed of going to Ohio State their entire lives. Jack Sawyer is the perfect example of that. So the perfect formula for a championship team, if that does exist right now in college football, it's supplementing through the transfer portal and having that foundation of guys that you kind of quote-unquote drafted and developed, if we want to use an NFL term. But Fitz, what is your power outage?
So my power outage, we've already been very kind to the college football playoff, and I want to stress that I think this has been an incredible college football playoff year. But my power outage is to the championship scheduling. Like, this game being after a huge weekend in the NFL, it just felt like, and I did a bunch of radio interviews today that everybody kept asking, do people even care about this game? It feels like we do. College football fanatics care about it, but championships are not for fanatics. They're for everybody. I think we're going to have to look at the schedule, especially knowing that we're going to continue to expand. I'm not sure college football, you got to read the room sometimes. Like, the fact that they scheduled a championship game right after the divisional round of the playoffs, which is always big in the NFL, on Martin Luther King Jr.'s day and on the day of the inauguration. Like, read the room, y'all. Like, understand that there's a lot carrying a lot of attention from everybody. I don't really understand for the sport why you would put your biggest event on a day where there are so many other things that cloud the attention. I think ultimately the calendar for college football, this is difficult for academics. Somebody smarter than me is going to have to figure it out. The entire calendar is going to have to be shifted. I think the season's going to have to be started earlier, and they're going to have to look at ways to get the championship game. Joel Klatt's idea of doing it on January 1st, great idea. We're going to have to shift the entire thing because it feels like a great game that finished a great epic season was lost in attention a little bit because of the fact that it's January 20th and we're just now getting the national championship.
That was going to be my power outage as well.
It
feels awkward, doesn't it? Like, it felt like there was such a lack of hype going into this game. And maybe that's me, you know, being a graduate of an SEC school and living in SEC country in Nashville and not having SEC representation in the national championship. Or maybe it's exactly what you said, that it's on a Monday in the middle of January on the same day as a presidential inauguration after we've just gone through 4 or 5 weeks of college football playoff play. Like, I am all for an expanded college football playoff. It just feels awkward when the last CFP game was this last Friday, and there's an awkward lapse between games, and you don't really know when the next game is. Like, last week I was like, wait, is it Wednesday, Thursday, or is it Thursday, Friday? And that's coming from someone who loves and covers this game. So I think that if there's just a little bit more standardization in the calendar, it feels a little bit more organized, and it's less of a, oh yeah, there's a national championship game happening tonight.
Caroline, you just mentioned something, though, that we haven't even talked about on the show. We have to at least acknowledge this. You live in SEC country.
Uh-huh.
This is back-to-back Big Ten champions. Like, I mean,
is it best conference in the sport?
I mean, SEC fans don't want to hear it, but back-to-back championships, there is a question of, I'm not a believer that the SEC's fallen off and they're not going to be competitive. I think we're 1 year into college football playoff expansion. Yeah. Let's all calm down. Let's get like a 5-year study here. But there is something to back-to-back Big Ten champions.
I agree. I agree that the SEC's not falling off. But the notion that the SEC is the superior conference in college football is not the truth anymore. It doesn't just mean more in the SEC. That's
it does just
all
mean
BS.
More.
That's all
you
BS.
You wouldn't get it.
The Big Ten, I'm not sitting here saying the Big Ten is far and away the superior conference in college football, but the SEC can't claim that either anymore. And the Big Ten has certainly come a long way in the last few years, and last couple of seasons has been the better conference of the two.
I think that's a testament to the world of college football that we're living in now, because so much of the SEC's dominance was highlighted by Nick Saban's dominance at Alabama. And what Nick Saban was able to do better than any other coach in America, second only to Kirby Smart, was retain players and have just an insane amount of depth that no other program in the country could match. So which team is the deepest? Which team is the most talented? Well, that's usually going to be the team that wins a national championship. Depth like that doesn't exist anymore in an NIL and a transfer portal world. Couple of players that we just talked about that were massive, you know, key cogs for Ohio State this year. Quinshon Judkins, transfer from Ole Miss. Caleb Downs, transfer from Alabama. Those are just two examples, but there is so much talent that maybe could have been saturated in the Southeastern Conference that are now going elsewhere because you can make money elsewhere, maybe get a better, cushier NIL deal elsewhere, and you're going to play elsewhere. No longer do you have to sit on the bench in Alabama for 3 or 4 years to get an opportunity and to get a shot. So I don't think it's just an SEC and Big Ten thing. I think it's a college football thing, that there's just more talent spread out.
And not just that, more money spread out. Like, yeah. At this point, NIL exists in a lot of places. Facilities are great in a lot of places. And I think one of the under-talked about portions of this is that coaching is great in a lot of places. Like, there are big-name college football coaches spread out all over college football now. So you can make astronomical money being a college football coach, not just in the SEC. So, I mean, what we just saw tonight over the course of the national championship, we saw two of the most respected college football coaches go head-to-head in Ryan Day and Marcus Freeman, and neither of them are part of the SEC, right? Like, so it's just a reminder that where the SEC used to seem to have just advantages in every category, they don't right now. It doesn't mean – and again, hit me in 5 years. In 5 years, we'll really know what the college landscape looks like. I think it's going to take a minute for all of this to settle down. I don't think that this means that the SEC is irrelevant, but I love the way you said it, Adam. I think it's fair, and maybe everybody should just relax and accept that the SEC is one of the best conferences in college football. That's true. There's just one of them. And it doesn't matter that they're not the best. They're just one of the best. And the Big Ten has proven that they are one of the best conferences in college football.
But the callers on Paul Feinbaum need to know that the SEC is the best.
True.
It's not adequate for the Feinbaum callers.
Fitz, to your point, to put a bow on this, the parity that we're seeing in college football, where you just mentioned it with the players and the coaches, the money, come this summertime, when revenue sharing comes through, when the settlement gets approved, every school going to be paying their players $20 million, and it's going to make parity even more. They will bring even more parity to the sport of college football, and the best coaches, the best players, who actually is the best, not who can pay them, not who funds the roster the most, all that kind of stuff, not who can pay the most out of high school. It's going to be everyone's pretty much even who can perform on the field. This trend is not going to change anytime soon, especially because of the revenue sharing coming.
And especially because right now in the current structure of the college football playoff, there is a seat at the table for a group of five representative. Who's to say that a group of five team like a Boise State or like a whoever insert group of five team here can't build a really impressive roster now that there at least seems to be a little bit of standardization with money and the amount of money that's available to pay players. So it's going to be a fascinating thing to look into moving forward. But that is going to do it for us today. He's Adam Brenneman. You can follow him on Twitter at AdamBrenneman81. He's at Jason Fitz. You can find me at CarolineFenton1. Always appreciate y'all for stopping by the podcast. So give it a like, give it a subscribe, a review, comment, all those great things. You can find us on the Yahoo Sports YouTube page and on your preferred podcast platform. So tell your friends, tell your enemies, tell Lou Holtz. Because just a quick scroll through Twitter, Lou Holtz has been going through it tonight. So appreciate y'all as always. We're out.